May it please the Court. Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. Mr. Brown, a career offender with a very violent history, received the mandatory minimum sentence in this case, and that was a sentence that fell 142 months below the bottom of the advisory guidelines. I think by anyone's estimation that was a substantial deviation. And we know from Gall then that what we need on this record is a sufficient justification from Judge McDade for that deviation. And that's where we're left in this case really scratching our heads, because when you look at both the stated reasons for the deviation that come at the end of the sentencing hearing and the sentencing transcript as a whole, this sentence on this record is just not understandable. This is similar to the Amole case out of this circuit, where the judge adopted a very negative tone from the beginning to the end of the sentencing hearing.
But let me intervene here for a minute. I mean, I certainly understand an argument here that the judge's explanation for choosing a sentence so much below the guideline range is terse at best and perhaps inadequate, that we can decide. But it seems that the judge, I would be very reluctant to tell district court judges that they can't really give a dressing down verbally to defendants, even if they think under 3553A some break on sentencing is appropriate in this sense of something below the guidelines. And it was certainly my feeling that's what Judge McDade was doing. He was really trying, you know, it was his opportunity to say to this guy, look, shape up. And if we then said to district judges, aha, you said to shape up, so that means it's got to be a stiffer sentence, we create bad incentives, I think. So I guess my sense of this case is, you know, whether this very short, as I get it, five-line explanation of this 142-month discount is adequate, because Gall tells us, on the one hand, there's no presumption of unreasonableness for a below-guideline sentence or an outside-guideline sentence. But on the other hand, you've got to justify it. Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, your comments, Judge Wood, are fair. We certainly don't want to dissuade district courts from engaging in these sorts of dialogues with the defendant. And oftentimes, Judge McDade does this frequently, will engage in an extended dialogue with the defendant, I think, to get a sense of who is this person in front of me. You know, I have
to dress him down verbally.
Both. Yes, and certainly to hold the defendant's feet to the fire, as Judge McDade did here, and to say, this is what I'm seeing in the PSR, this is what I'm seeing in your history, this is what Congress and the Sentencing Commission tell me I ought to do with someone like you. I want to know whether you can provide me with a reason through this dialogue to give you a second chance. I want to know whether all of this adequately and accurately represents the person in front of me. And, of course, we want to encourage that in our judges, and we have absolutely no problem with that. I think the problem here is that there's no movement in the transcript. Typically what we'll see in other cases with Judge McDade and with other judges when they do engage in these long, extended, searching dialogues is some sort of movement, where at the beginning there will be this dressing down, and you defendant, need to account for this, and you need to answer for this, and there's a disconnect here between the letters from your family and what I'm seeing in the PSR. How do you account for that? All very appropriate, but then oftentimes what we'll see is the defendant will respond to those questions in a way that resonates with the district court, and the court will say, ah, okay, I didn't know that, or I'm hearing tremendous sincere remorse from you. I'm hearing that you've changed your ways, that you've learned your lesson. Those things can often then lead a judge, after the dressing down or after the extended dialogue, to say, I see something in you. I think you deserve a second chance. And maybe not everybody would agree with me, but that's where I'm coming from. But the problem on this transcript, we can only go with what the judge said. That's the only thing that this court has to review. There's no movement from beginning to end. The judge repeatedly says to Mr. Brown, I think you're trying to run a con on this court. In fact, says it immediately before announcing the three reasons for imposing the sentence that substantially deviates.
He does say that, but then his second reason, I will note, the longest period of time you spent has been more or less 2 years. That, to me, harks back to what defense counsel had said by saying, you know, to jump from 2 years up to 10 is, you know, percentage-wise, a huge increase, you know, and defense counsel had argued that that was enough of a marginal increase that it might. So one could infer that Judge McDay just accepted that argument of counsel.
And I think that that inference could be made on a slightly different record. But again, we have to look at that in the context of the record. And defense counsel made that argument to suggest to the court, this was on the heels of the prosecution argument saying, this individual, Mr. Brown, cannot be rehabilitated at this point. He is going to reoffend. How do we know that? We know that because we've tried everything with him. He started his life of crime at age 14. He committed five convictions before age 23, didn't serve a day of jail time, but he was given supervision, probation, other things. Then there's been some incremental punishment in terms of jail time, prison time. He's reoffending on parole, on probation. You know, there's no hope here. Defense counsel then comes in on the heels of that and says, well, you know, maybe something hasn't been tried yet in terms of this idea for that he can be rehabilitated and will not reoffend. So had Judge McDade picked up on that and in the context of this conversation with the defendant said, I think you have learned your lesson. I think that these prior sentences, they weren't terribly long, but they seem to put the fear of God in you and you're making different decisions, might have led us to that reasonable inference that you just pointed out, Judge Wood. But that's not what the judge says. The judge repeatedly says, you are likely to reoffend, and the reason you're likely to reoffend really doesn't have anything to do with the length of your prior sentences. It has to do with the language out of your own mouth. You don't get it. You are not accepting responsibility. All I'm hearing from you is that you are a victim, that nothing is your fault, that in these prior offenses, that it's all been a big misunderstanding and someone punched you first, or you blacked out and didn't know what you were doing, or you can't be held accountable because you had an abusive childhood, or, you know, either your father wasn't there to discipline you or your mother disciplined you too much. But there's no sense on this record that you, defendant, are accepting what you've done, that you have any appreciation for the gravity of these offenses, and that you have made a decision. The judge says, I do not believe as you stand here today that you have made that critical decision that you are not going to do these things anymore. You have not decided that you are not going to pursue a life of crime. I don't believe that. So I think that in a different case, again, we can only go on what the judge says here, and I think that that's why this is a compelling case that this sentence needs to be vacated on this record.
Ms. Mullen, now, the government didn't make a recommendation, right? Just talked about a significant, what does it say, a sentence that conveys deterrence for drug dealers.
We made a recommendation that the defendant should be sentenced within the guideline range. That was the ultimate recommendation of the prosecutor, and then left it up to the judge's discretion. Again, that was before the 40-minute colloquy between the defendant and the judge. You know, oftentimes we're in a position of not being able to stand back up and say anything, and we don't anticipate. I don't know whether the prosecutor at that point might have recommended
something else. And I don't know whether you've got a case where there's more than the plea represents, and I'm not asking the government to tell us if you dismiss charges or whatever. But the judge references you've never been away for more than, I guess, 17 months.
The defendant's contention that was a long time.
Maybe to the criminal justice system, not Judge McDade, but that's, and indeed maybe the state criminal justice system, because that from the charges. But here he is, he's going to sentence him to five times the longest sentence he ever had.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I understand the many months that you speak of below the range, but it is by a factor of five times what he's going to have to spend 8.5 years, right, at a minimum.
If he's
a perfect prisoner, he's going to do 8.5.
It is a significant jump. That's true. And again, he received a mandatory minimum of 120, which he, that was justified by the or supported by the prior drug conviction. So he would have received that. The 120-month sentence completely discounts everything else in his criminal background. It is a big jump, and we're not suggesting that that's not an appropriate thing for a judge to consider in a given case. But again, with all these considerations, whether it be that or age or upbringing, it needs to be moored to something. Like this idea of age. You know, we're not suggesting that a judge can't consider age. This court has made it abundantly clear that in an appropriate circumstance, that is something that the judge can consider. But throwing out the age of the defendant without connecting it to anything. Judge Pratt, the district court judge in Gall, of course, was talked about the frontal lobe not being developed in the latest brain research, and that the defendant there was very young when he committed his prior offenses and maybe didn't have that maturity, that development. So there was some mooring of it to what was going on in that given case, and in that case, scientific research. There are other cases where, you know, someone is would receive a de facto life sentence, things like that. We're simply saying that it needs to be moored to something with respect to the particular defendant.
You think he ought to be sentenced to be released in his 60s, not his 50s?
I guess that's the bottom line here, because that's what the guidelines call for and the career offender range calls for, and there just wasn't anything on this record to support a deviation.
I understand.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mullen. Christensen? Christian, were you counsel below?
I was not, no. I was here yesterday, so I'm doing a twofer this week.
Always good to see you.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. I represent Mr. Rodney Brown in this matter, and this case comes down to essentially judicial styles, and this court is more than aware that there are many judicial styles. Judge McDade's style is often to have a colloquy with the defendant, ask probing questions, clarify issues, and as Judge Wood said, perhaps give a dressing down. He is not the only district court judge in the circuit that certainly does that, and certainly not the only judge that has done something like this. This is not a perfect sentencing hearing, but fortunately, the standard is not perfection. I think this court would see many, many more appeals if the standard were perfection. And the court in this case did create a record that can adequately explain the chosen sentence, allow for appellate review, and promotes the perception of fair sentencing.
Well, to that point, Ms. Mullen, and I think with some understanding of her position, says it's really not moored to his comments. I mean,
there's really not more.
It's not moored, tied to his comments. The comments are overwhelmingly critical.
Correct.
And not particularly sympathetic in the sense that I'm going to give you a significantly lighter sentence than might be the norm.
Certainly. And his negative comments, as far as the number of words, far outweighs positive comments. However, I can see the inference that during this colloquy, Judge McDade is learning more about the defendant and, in his mind, thinking of reasons why the sentence should be lower, primarily the reasons that were given.
But doesn't he need to elaborate somehow? I mean, okay, so Mr. Rodney Brown is 40 years old at this point. It's a datum, but, you know, I don't know whether that cuts in favor of his ready ability to re-enter the drug world at age 49, or whether that means by the time he's 49, looking at 50 in the eyes, you know, he'll be. I mean, it's just out there, you know, and I don't. Maybe there was a story that could have been told about Mr. Brown, about whether his educational efforts or whatever he was doing, but we don't hear it. And I think, in this world where there's so much appellate review of sentences, without a more fulsome explanation than what Judge McDade gave us, I don't know how we can say that this was a rational choice of a sentence.
I think that certainly if it had only been about age, or only been about the length of the prior sentences, or only been about his personal characteristics and history, that would definitely mean that there's not enough, because I don't think, and the government has cited cases, that when those factors alone are considered, that's enough for a substantial deviation from the guideline range. However, we have the district court discussing age, the length of prior sentences, the number and the type, but we also have him discussing at great length his personal history. And part of this is the colloquy about his abusive relationship with his mother. What kind of abuse? How severe was it? And I think that we see Judge McDade probing into the exact nature of this abuse and taking it a little further.
Well, he asks questions, but I guess what I don't see is the wrap-up. You know, as Ms. Mullen said, you know, how does he get from you've never really taken responsibility for yourself, but here's this abuse and here's some reason to think that giving you this lower sentence is going to give you time to apply yourself, you know, finish your college degree in prison, or whatever it is. I mean, all of that speculation for us.
Sure. And unfortunately, I like I said, I agree that this is not the perfect sentencing hearing from either points of view. If it were my case, on appeal looking for issues, I would think, well, I but it cuts that we can't just say, well, the judge isn't allowed to say negative things if he's going to give a lower sentence, that it's got to be all positive.
Yeah,
there's
I don't
a balance
want a rule that
there.
Says that. I mean, you know, as I said, I think that would be a terrible rule.
Right. And I do think that there is a lot of credence, particularly with Judge McDade, about the amount of time that someone has previously spent in prison. In the federal system, 120 months is not a terribly long sentence for our clients. But when you come from the state system and the longest time you've served is 17 months or 2 years, it's a huge difference. And Judge McDade has his finger on those issues.
Yeah, but he spent, he didn't spend a lot of time. He spent less time than he was actually sentenced for a lot of those things. But it just seemed everything was sort of progressive. What would be the guidelines without the career criminal?
They would ultimately be 120 months because of the mandatory minimum.
Well,
I believe they were lower,
below
perhaps
that.
63 to 78
okay. Well,
months without it.
That's at least one factor. Then, but I just looked through this. At age 18, you got aggravated battery. At age 18, resisting police officer. At 22, is battery. 23, unlawful restraint. Dragged her from her residence and into his motor vehicle and refused to allow her to leave the vehicle, et cetera. At age 25, aggravated battery. Age 29, unlawful possession of a weapon and possessed a handgun, released on parole, et cetera. He's returned, parole violator. He was sentenced to less in these various state crimes, but he just keeps going. Age 31, there's a battery, and then there's, you know, read there's more aggravating circumstances. Age 33, this is unlawful possession of controlled substance. Now he's getting into the drug area. At age 36, domestic battery, 90 days in jail, etc. So all of this is what the judge is looking at and saying, you know, you got to straighten up. There's an old country song, too old for too young for girls, too old for women. He's Mr. In-Between. This is Mr. In-Between. He's 40. He really can't say, well, I'm still youthful, therefore I didn't know any better, and I'm not a geezer like I am, you know, that he's not going to die in prison. So after Judge McDade goes through all of this, then he sort of abruptly goes back, well, you get maybe a lot less than you deserve. They've never sentenced anybody, so I don't know how to do it. I'll hear what Judge Flom has to say. But there was an awful big conflict between what he said and what he did. That's all.
Yes, it is troubling, and I think the inference that he was convinced by whatever arguments defense counsel made is a good inference, and my problem is that there's no inference opposite. There's no inference as to how he made this decision aside from the fact he just went with a random number, and I don't think that that's certainly supported by the record. It is an inference that the court has to make that he was convinced by this and just didn't explain it well enough, but the opposite inference is nearly impossible to make unless something else happened that's not on the record, and certainly none of us can consider that. So given the record in this case, which is not perfect, but certainly adequate, Mr. Brown asked that the court affirm his sentence, and he will serve 120 months. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Ms. Mullins.
For time.
Nothing. All right. Well, as always, thanks to both able counsel, and we will take this case under advisement. Court will stand in recess.